Chapter 2. Breaking the Law. Robert is at the table nursing a large vodka martini. He looks at the clock. She's late. For a moment, he's not sure if she's going to show. Then, at exactly 7:10, Zoe walks through the door. All heads turn as she's led to the table. He smiles, impressed by how lovely she looks. He's quite surprised to find himself relieved that she's there. He gets up and pulls the chair out for her. You look amazing. Zoe can feel herself blushing and remembers the ABC law. Being in control is a little challenging as her heart is beating wildly. But as the evening goes on, the conversation is effortless. No discussion of parents or relationships. They just mainly discuss their work and the challenging cases they've faced. The 2002 Cristal champagne goes down a little too easily. And after the third glass, she's feeling a little lightheaded. As she's finishing her dessert, he mentions a little place he knows where they could go for a nightcap. Law number 11, always leave early, leave them wanting more, pops into her head. And she leaps up just a little too quickly. She's dizzy from the champagne, but knows she has to go before her resolve slips. I'm sorry, I can't, I really have to go, but thanks, it's been lovely. He stands up, but before he can say another word, she grabs her pashmina and runs out the door. She stumbles on the steps and loses a shoe. A waiter catches her laughing. He hands it back to her and says, "Hey, Cinderella, your shoe." She takes it from him, hoping Robert didn't see her fall. And shoe in hand, she hops down the road. Phew, these are my Clio Bs. No way I'm leaving one of these for any man. Not even Robert. In the back of her taxi, Zoe recounts the evening's events. She's delighted when she realises she's obeyed most of the laws. She can't wait to tell Mitch how it went and how much she enjoyed herself. "These laws had better bloody work after all that," she exclaims, under her breath. Robert, meanwhile, is perplexed. This has never happened to him before. He gets in a cab, goes to the favourites list on his phone, and dials a random number. "Hi, gorgeous. How are you? Fancy a nightcap at mine?" He smiles. "Great. See you soon. Can't wait." Despite the delights of his booty call, he wakes up thinking of Zoe. This is totally against his better judgment, and one of his rules that says never get attached. He is intrigued by her, though. He can't quite believe she didn't fall for his charms. He starts to analyse the evening, and as he wonders what could possibly have gone wrong, a little self-doubt creeps in. He'd laughed at all her jokes. He was attentive and witty. He'd paid her lots of compliments. He'd looked splendid, and he'd been on his usual top form. Hadn't he? It makes him all the more determined to up his game so he can get her into his bed. "This one," he says to himself, "clearly requires a little more work. I'll have to call Letitia later and get her number." Letitia is less than pleased about giving Robert Zoe's number, but a very excited Zoe, who sat with her when he calls to ask for it, insists, via some very animated sign language, that she give it to him. The excitement soon fades as the long waiting game unfolds. During the wait, Zoe is nearly driven to distraction thinking about him and cursing the laws book, thinking it hadn't worked. But after 3 days, Robert finally calls her. She's sitting with Letitia when her phone rings. She looks down and sees that it's an unknown number. She is mildly hysterical and nearly misses the call. Attempting to compose herself and using much self-restraint, she answers it.
"Hello, Zoe here. How can I help you?"
Zoe goes bright red in embarrassment, and Letitia gives her a disapproving look.
"Who is it?"
Letitia mouths silently. Zoe gets up from the table and walks away, trying to sound casual.
"Oh, Robert. Hi, how are you? Oh, I'm really good, thank you. Tomorrow?"
She remembers the laws.
"No, sorry, I'm busy tomorrow."
"No, can't do Wednesday either."
"Friday?"
She takes a deep breath.
"Yes, I can do Friday." "Oh, Soho House at 7:30. "Okay, I'll see you there."
She sits back at the table, grinning like a hyena. Letitia is not amused. "Girlfriend, you're getting yourself into hot water now, and I really don't want to see you getting hurt."
"Don't worry, Letitia. This time I'm in control, I promise. And I'm following the laws."
"Yes,
but Robert Bernstein is the world's leading expert when it comes to bending and breaking the law. Robert can't believe she's making him wait. A very small, yet significant part of him fears that his Teflon-coated confidence might be starting to lose its shine. Zoe only has 4 days to find an outfit and get herself ready. Her first stop is Westfields, then Covent Garden. She blitzes the shops and makes a huge dent in her holiday savings account. Zoe conveniently forgets the Laws of Dating subsection that applies to shopping. Never extend your budget for the sake of a date and exercise caution with credit cards. Avoid impulse buys at all costs. Buy in haste. Repent at leisure. Weighed down with a mountain of shopping, she makes her way to her favourite hairdressers in Waterloo. Amanda has been doing her hair since she was 16, and like all good hairdressers, knows more about her love life than anyone else on the planet. Amanda, who owns the salon, is 32, a yoga fanatic, and macrobiotic foodie, who only uses organic products and has long since gotten over experimenting with her own hair, so wears it long and her natural brown colour. She's also training to be a therapist, as she spends so much time listening to people's problems that she's decided she wants to be able to do more to help people. For her, it's the natural next step, from changing how they look on the outside to changing how they feel on the inside. Donnie, on the other hand, her faithful assistant, really wants to be a singer, but hasn't got the courage to go for it. He is wildly experimental with his look. His hair is currently cropped close at the sides, long, wavy, and dyed a luminous shade of blonde on top, a colour that would have made Marilyn Monroe proud. Although his current inspiration is the Ziegfeld Follies. His aspiration to be on the stage hasn't materialised so far, and the only people who've ever heard him sing are Amanda and the fortunate or unfortunate clients of the salon, depending on how you looked at it. His voice is good, but the salon is a little small to accommodate one that's quite so big, which is a little surprising coming from such a willowy wisp of a man. Once Zoe is settled in and her hair is done, she asks for their advice on what she should wear. "Is this the first date?" asks Donnie. "No, it's the second." "Have you slept with him yet?" he asks. "No, I'm following the laws." "Oh, for God's sake," Donnie says. "Is he hot?" "Oh my God, he's so hot. He's off the scale hot."
"Then what are you waiting for?"
"Zoe, does this mean you like this one?" Amanda steps in. Zoe looks away.
Maybe.
"Oh dear, it sounds as though you really do like this one. Okay, tell me more. What does he do and where is he taking you?" "He's a lawyer, one of the best divorce lawyers in the country, and he's taking me to Soho House," Zoe says without taking a breath.
"Well, darling, if you're not going to shag him, you could at least let me have a go,"
Donnie whispers in her ear. "I never said I wasn't going to shag him, just not yet. The laws are very clear. I'm not allowed to go anywhere near the bedroom until it's confirmed we are an item."
"Rubbish! Life's too short. Get in there while you can."
Donnie grabs a can of mousse and thrusts it in front of her.
"Darling, a cock in the hand is worth two in the bush, if you catch my drift."
This is accompanied by peals of his raucous laughter. Zoe and Amanda look at him with mock horror.
"Haven't you got some cleaning to do?" Amanda says with good humour. "Donnie's work is never done."
He skips off singing loudly as he goes,
"It's raining men, hallelujah."
"So what do I wear?" She pulls out a red dress and Amanda shakes her head to say no. She grabs a short, sparkly black dress and it's another no. Several items later, she holds up a simple white dress and Amanda nods. Donnie confirms his approval too. So hair done, outfit settled, she heads into the back room with Donnie to have a pedicure. On this occasion, she ignores all of his usual celebrity gossip as her mind is fixated on the event ahead and the good impression she needs to make to ensure that Robert falls madly in love with her. Robert arrives at Soho House early, carefully dressed as usual, in a sharply styled grey suit and a crisp, open-necked, poplin cotton white shirt. He glances at his Philippe Patek watch. Strangely, he feels a little nervous and wonders if she's going to be on time this time. He's surprised at how much time he spent thinking about her, remembering the colour of her eyes, the sound of her laughter and how happy he'd been in her company. He's really looking forward to seeing her again, even though he won't even admit this to himself. He's a bit baffled because he can't read her in the same way as the others. And for once he isn't sure how he feels or how she feels about him. At the same time, he likes that she's a bit of a challenge. He thrives on challenges and is determined as ever that he will win his prize. At 7:37 precisely, she steps into the bar. Having waited outside for exactly 7 minutes, assuring that she... Having waited outside for exactly 7 minutes, ensuring she abides by her law, she looks even more radiant than last time. Once more, heads turn as she makes her way over to the bar, smiling at him. He catches a waft of her perfume. Wow, you smell divine. Thanks, it's called Heavenly Rose. Well, it really suits you. She feels herself blushing again. As they sit down at their table, the atmosphere between them is electric. They're both a little lost for words to begin with, but after a couple of dirty martinis, they relax and the conversation starts to flow. She's feeling guilty as she sips her second martini, having broken one of her laws, but thinks, ugh, what the hell, a couple won't hurt. Throughout the evening, she skillfully manages to avoid discussing any of her past relationships, and when he asks why someone as beautiful as her is still single, she laughs. I've been dedicating time to my career, and I'm fussy, she says, raising an eyebrow and smiling. However, inside her head, she feels anything but cool. In fact, she's freaking out, hoping she's giving the right non-committal answers according to the laws. And as the night comes to a close, he tries again to suggest they continue on somewhere else. As tempted as she is, and she is tempted, very tempted, she knows it would be fatal. I'd love to, but I have an important case on Monday, and I have a lot of work to do. I really need to be on top of my game, but thank you, it's been a wonderful evening. He's slightly astounded that she's just used his own line against him. But before he knows it, she's given him a peck on the cheek and disappeared into the night. Again, leaving him at the table, open-mouthed. He picks up his phone and stares at his favourites list, but puts the phone away again. You must be losing your touch, he sighs to himself. And he heads home, alone. Zoe gets home to Mitch, breathless and excited. Oh, Mitch, I think he might just be the one. I think I'm in love. Mitch growls unconvincingly, thinking, I've heard this before. I really wish she wouldn't do this to herself. They curl up together on the bed and she falls asleep with a big, silly grin on her face. Robert can't sleep and resorts to playing his PlayStation, something he hasn't done for a very long time. Then he puts on his favourite porn site, but even that irritates and frustrates him, so he switches it off and goes to bed. He lies there tossing and turning, running the events of the night over and over in his head, wondering where he went wrong. Eventually he falls asleep. He dreams of Zoe. In the dream, they're at the altar, about to get married. She turns to him, laughs, and runs away, leaving him alone at the altar. He's bereft. People are laughing at him. He wails, no, Zoe, come back. But it's too late. She's gone. He wakes up suddenly, drenched in sweat, his face bewildered. He punches his pillow, pulls it over his head, and goes right back to sleep. At work the next day, Zoe is hysterically happy and positively beaming. Letitia is decidedly unimpressed. Several of her colleagues are cooing excitedly and want to know everything that happened on her date. They are even more desperate to find out what will happen next. Robert cannot stop thinking about her. He realises he's going to have to up his game even more. He hatches a plan. A few days later, Zoe's at work when her phone rings. She has looked at it at least 20,000 times in the hope that it is Robert, but up to now it never was. This time it is. She's bursting with excitement inside, but desperately trying to keep it cool. She's been thinking about nothing else but him since their last date. Hey, Zoe, how are you?
Oh, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Not so bad. I was wondering if you were free on Thursday. Wanted to invite you to dinner at mine. I'll cook, he says. But I have to warn you, it might be stressful as I'm not great at it, but I will try not to poison you, I promise. And he laughs. Zoe is very happy, but is totally disarmed by his offer, as it's so unexpected. She falls straight into her usual trap of playing the rescuer, and as a result breaks all of the laws in less than 30 seconds. Oh, Robert, I don't want to put you through any stress. I'm a very good cook. I love cooking, so why don't you come round to mine instead, she says. Oh, really? If you don't mind, that sounds wonderful. You're an angel. Shall we say 7:30? You can text me your address. He smiles, delighted that his fail-safe plan has worked. But he knew it would. It always did. After all, she says to Mitch later that night, isn't the way to a man's heart through his stomach? If I can wow him with a great meal, the relationship is surely in the bag. Mitch simply growls at her. He's not impressed with her one little bit. He's watching her face as she gets all moony-eyed. She slipped into her favourite daydream, which has now intensified as she thinks she knows the face of the groom. She's imagining herself at long last, in lace, walking up the aisle and into his arms. She becomes aware of a little voice inside her mind, screaming at her to say no to him and play it safe. But it's way too late. As usual, she's completely ignoring her inner wisdom, and as usual, it's going to be at her peril. All her common sense is being thrown out the window in favour of her romantic illusions. All reasonable sense is lost. It's the night of the date. As she gets ready, Liza Minnelli is playing loudly. She's singing along as she chops the vegetables and singing loudly, using her vegetable knife as her microphone. She starts rolling the pastry, using the rolling pin as her microphone now. She starts to add the beef and the trimmings. She puts the pastry dish into the oven and moves on to the chocolate dessert, whisking cream and melting the chocolate in a pan. Then the spoon becomes her microphone. She becomes even more impassioned. Liza has no flies on her. She swirls around the table, laying out the cutlery and the plates and the glasses. She sings the last line in earnest, standing still in the centre of her kitchen, arms outstretched, convinced she's on the winning ground. Mitch is looking up from his bed, his head resting on his paws, eyes following her in complete despair. Her confidence is high because everything has been planned to the last detail, with almost military precision. She looks at Mitch and sees the worried look on his face. She grins at him. Don't you worry, Mitch. I got this. What could possibly go wrong? Mitch groans. He's not so sure. Okay, Mitch, she says excitedly. I followed Nigella's recipes to the letter, so that must classify me as a domestic goddess. Beef Wellington is looking fabulous, and her indulgent chocolate dessert recipe is a triumph. It's all perfect. She sighs contentedly. Mitch, she says. I feel certain he'll be so impressed he'll fall madly in love with me. In fact, I won't be at all surprised if he doesn't propose right here, tonight. Mitch is still not looking quite as sure. He's a little more than concerned because the cooking has been helped along by the occasional, in her mind, very small gin and tonic. Just to help me calm down, Mitch, she says. The law's ABC rule requires that I stay calm, which is my excuse. This is an emergency and I can handle my drink so it'll be fine. She notices the time. He's due to arrive soon, so she runs into the bedroom to get changed. She showers and applies subtle but feature-enhancing makeup and decides to dress more casually this time. In her favourite jeans, strappy sandals and a chiffon slightly off-the-shoulder Zara top. Just a little sexy but not overt. This is another of the purchases that she didn't take back. Once she's ready, she heads back into the kitchen and looks at the clock. It's time. She takes a deep breath. And when he doesn't arrive immediately, she pours herself another drink. As the minutes go by, she gets more and more nervous. And when her phone rings, she literally jumps out of her seat. It's him. He's apologising for being late. His case ran over. He tells her he'll be with her in an hour. So she runs around and turns everything off. She doesn't want the food to be overcooked. Not after all her careful planning. She then heads for the bathroom. Suddenly her stomach is in knots. She tries to do deep breathing, but it doesn't really work. And she catches Mitch looking at her with a knowing look. What? He cocks his head at her as if to say, chill out, woman, he's only a man. He's not any man, Mitch. This is my future husband we're talking about. I have to get this right. I have to calm down. I know. I'll just have one more very small G&T. That will help. Robert's lateness means he has to drive to Zoe's straight from work. The traffic to her place is terrible, so it gives him plenty of time to think. He's looking forward to the evening and is pretty certain that tonight is a done deal. Getting them to invite him to dinner at their place has never failed, and Zoe has yet to make it to the favourites list. Meanwhile, Zoe is still waiting anxiously. She pours another very small shot of gin, adds a generous splash of tonic and more ice. She takes a large gulp and suddenly nature calls again. 7 visits to the toilet and another couple of small gins later, and the doorbell finally rings. She takes a deep breath and looks to Mitch for a bit of support, but he's already walking away, sighing. Robert arrives with a beautiful bouquet of cream roses, a bottle of Chateau Neuf de Pape, and a big smile. On the inside, she's overjoyed to see him. On the outside, she's still trying to play it cool. He notices she's not too steady on her feet and asks if she's been drinking. "Oh, just a little G&T while I was cooking," she giggles. "Do you want one?" "Sure, why not? It's been a long day. I'm so sorry I'm late. Occupational hazard, you know." She did. She pours him a drink and then he follows her into the kitchen. "Nice place you have here. Is it yours?"
"Yes, I bought it years ago. It's compact and bijou, but I love it."
"Good choice. You can't go wrong in this area." She's pleased by his approval and hopes the food will go down just as well. It does. He's suitably impressed and enthusiastically praises her dishes. The bottle of wine she'd opened is emptied, and then they make their way easily through his contribution too. After dinner, they head back into the lounge and sit together on the sofa. Zoe's guard is now well and truly down, and she is very, very drunk. So when Robert reaches over and kisses her, she throws her arms around him and kisses him back with no reserve whatsoever. Mitch is watching from the bedroom and can't cope with it anymore. He knows a bad one when he sees one, and he wants to protect Zoe. He jumps onto the sofa where the two of them are now locked in a passionate embrace and promptly vomits all over Robert's trousers. Zoe is furious with Mitch and sends him in disgrace to the kitchen. She apologises for his bad behaviour and helps Robert out of his ruined trousers. She takes them into the kitchen and drops them into the sink, glaring at Mitch, who stares back at her, unrepentant. She heads back to the lounge and offers Robert a towel. But with Mitch firmly out of the way, he's able to move into full offensive. "Leave them, they're not important." He kisses her again and leads her to the bedroom. They fall laughing onto the bed. Zoe catches sight of the Book of the Laws on the bedside table and flings it under the bed. Then she throws herself into delightful but forbidden and dangerous territory. Zoe wakes in the morning with a hangover from hell, wondering what on earth happened. She's praying she didn't do anything stupid, but the fact that she cannot remember anything much past the beef Wellington leaves a horrible suspicion that she may have gone too far. It hurts to move, and when she finally opens her eyes, she's horrified to see Robert on the other side of the room getting dressed. His shirt is on and he has a towel round his waist. His trousers are still in the kitchen sink. "Morning, gorgeous. How's your head?" She groans. "Thanks for everything. Great dinner, and you were great too." He blows her a kiss.
"Was I?"
She winces. It's all a bit of a blur. And the bits she does remember are making her toes curl, and not in a good way. He walks over and gives her a kiss on the forehead. "Gotta go. Need to get back and clean up." She looks at the clock and sees that it's 6 a.m. As he walks to the door, she can't help herself. She breaks yet another one of the cardinal laws. "Do you have to go so early? It's Saturday." "Yeah, I got a load of things I need to do today. No peace for the wicked, no rest for the weary."
She laughs nervously. I know you're busy. So when am I going to see you again?"
Robert hesitates. Soon.
"How soon?" she says, panicking now.
"I'll call you." Her vision of the wedding is disappearing in front of her eyes. She knows she's messed things up. Again.
"I'm at a party next weekend," she blurts out before she can stop herself. It'll be fun. Do you want to come?"
"Sorry, babe. Look, I need to be straight with you. I don't do relationships. You know what I mean. But I'll call you." As he closes the door with his trousers rolled up in the plastic carrier bag that the wine came in, she knows all too well what he means. This is the most overused blow-off line in the history of dating. There will be no calling. It's done. She buries her head into the pillow, calling herself every abusive name known to mankind. She feels like her heart is breaking, her head's going to explode, and she wants to die. As Robert gets into the car, wearing her towel, he replays the hungover Zoe asking him to go to a party with him, and he shudders. He laughs to himself. Shame. I thought she was different, but it turns out she's just like the rest of them. That was a lucky escape. He pulls the car out onto the road, forgetting to turn on his lights. He's too busy laughing and shaking his head and isn't paying attention. He's also still a little bit drunk from the night before. He leans down to turn on the stereo and fails to see the big truck that's in the wrong lane and coming straight at him. The truck driver doesn't see him until it's too late. Robert is driving too fast, and there's no time to manoeuvre himself out of the way. He hits the truck practically head on. Robert's car is a total write-off. The driver of the truck is unhurt but in shock. He sees the concertina Jaguar and the blood-covered head of the driver slumped over the airbags. He fears the worst and calls the emergency services, who take Robert's almost lifeless body straight to the nearest intensive care unit.